morning is number 143048, Garcia v. DHS. Okay, Mr. Aldridge.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This matter is before you because the arbitrator held that the circumstances warranted a forfeiture of a right to the hearing on the merits because the union's mailing of an arbitration invocation on day 28, with a 30-day deadline, when it arrived to the agency on day 33, was not filed as according under the contract. And it's the Mr. Garcia's position that this is just untenable for the reasons expressed in Gunn v. Veterans Administration. Those principles, I believe, are very important in this case because they hold that federal policy favors arbitration. It should be faster, cheaper, and less rigid. The standard that the arbitrator held here, however, when you compare it to the procedures of the Merit Systems Protection Board and the Federal Labor Relations Authority, is clearly more rigid. Now, the agency in its brief in opposition said those procedures are irrelevant. But you have to, if you're going to say that the grievance procedure and the arbitration procedure is supposed to be less rigid and faster, in order to use the word less, you have to be able to compare it to something. And so Mr. Garcia here has asked that you really look at that in determining that this ruling here, while the agency argued it was a factual determination, that factual determination still needs to be consistent with law.
Perfect. Do I understand right? Our review of an arbitrator's interpretation of a collective bargaining agreement, unlike in kind of the rest of the world of labor arbitration, is de novo. We give de novo interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement, right?
That's my understanding, Your Honor.
So, and I take it your argument is that the word filed has different meanings in different contexts. A substitute for the MSPB procedure makes the MSPB's notion of filed the most appropriate way of resolving the ambiguity.
I'm bringing this to a de novo review by saying, how can you apply this definition of filed when it's clearly contrary to law at 5 U.S.C. 7121, which says that the arbitration and grievance procedure should be fair, simple, and then when the case law is applied to that, that it should be less rigid, it should be faster, cheaper, and it's the procedural defects which came out in Dunn.
But that argument's a little peculiar because if the CBA provision said, was more explicit and said filing NIT receipt in the office, that wouldn't be inconsistent with labor procedures. They could say that and define filing that way.
Yeah, no, then that's one thing that Mr. Garcia would concede here is that the parties, when they negotiate their CBA, they're free to define the terms as long as they're consistent with law and regulations that apply. What we have here is a CBA that said, as for grievances that were not discipline or adverse action, you can submit them to arbitration, as the agency pointed out in the brief. And then when you have discipline and adverse actions, it's filed. You have to think about who's following these procedures. They're your rank-and-file federal employees, in this case, Border Patrol agents, who say, okay, what's within my control?
I assume you think the problem with this case is that the arbitrator looked at filing and viewed it in the strict context of filing with the court, which often means received, although even then, not always, where it should have looked at it in the context of the entire agreement, which in one place used the word submitted, in one place used the word filed, and this has certainly less technical meaning.
I completely agree with you, Your Honor. And then when you also look at the evidence that the union submitted to the arbitrator saying, we've done it like this before, and here we've got a removal proceeding where this grievant here says, I've seen these other matters by the filings here go to a hearing on the merits, but yet my grievance is invoked the same manner, and suddenly this word filed needs something else. And what the arbitrator is pointing to, as you pointed out, Your Honor, was Black's Law Dictionary, and then court cases that kind of deviate from the informality of the grievance procedure, which is what the grievant really and the appellant here really wanted what you to focus on, is there's an inherent inequity in this. When you're looking at how this procedure should be so simple and informal, but now this filing process made it so rigid, so formal, that it's completely contrary to the standards you're supposed to compare it to.
Could I ask you a more mundane question? This relevant paragraph, or two paragraphs from the arbitration agreement, are not the same in various places in the record, which I found to be kind of puzzling. The paragraphing is different, which may have some potential significance. If you compare, for example, the provision is set forth in the government brief at page 3 compared to that set forth in JA 29, what is the paragraphing? The sentence about if service by mail 5 additional calendar days shall be allowed, is that part of the last paragraph or the first paragraph?
Your Honor, without having the CBA here in front of me, I'm not sure I can answer that question. I cited to the arbitrator's decision as I felt relevant here, and I focused on the word filing here. And it seemed clear to me that with, like, if you're looking at the agency's brief at page 3, I believe that's where you directed me to, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
It's Article 34 the CBA provides. I believe that second paragraph does appear in Article 34A of the CBA. So I believe it's correctly quoted there, but you compare that
to the language appears there, but the paragraphing is different. In some versions, that sentence is in the last paragraph, and some versions, the paragraph's in the first paragraph. It might make a difference, because if it appears in the last paragraph, it might suggest that where the receipt of the notice is by mail, that you get 5 additional days. But I guess you're not arguing that anyway, right?
No, I did not get into that because I felt that the evidence presented to the arbitrator at the hearing and what was focused upon.
We don't have a copy of the CBA in the appendix, do we?
I believe opposing counsel informed me that he did bring it here today. And I had told him before we walked up, I said, if the justices would like to see it, I'm not going to object to it.
I think he can clear this up for us, but it seems like in the red brief, the sentence may be in the wrong paragraph and in the brief in the appendix to the arbitrator, it is in the right place, but I think we probably need that cleared up. It seems to be more logical to be in the first paragraph because it follows the discussion of delivered or mailed, but who knows?
I guess we'll have to let that document speak for itself if that permits, pleases the court.
But if indeed it's in, that sentence belongs in the first paragraph, then the second paragraph it essentially says, okay, now we're talking about a different kind of thing. As to that, we have a longer period, and one might expect, you in particular might want to expect, that therefore the entirety of the now extended first paragraph, including the mailing rule, would apply.
Yes, if that's how it reads. It's the mailing rule, I, going from recollection, I want to say it might appear in Article 33, which is the grievance procedure. And then there's the arbitration procedure, which would be Article 34. So I'm not sure. I can't recall. I need to see the document. But I can tell you that the way that I think the union representative...
Maybe you can borrow it from the government.
Sure, I'm happy to. Again, I think it's probably right in the appendix because in the first paragraph, it's talking about you get 15 days after the decision is delivered or mailed, and then you get an additional 5 if it's mailed, whereas in the second, the deadline doesn't run from the date of delivery or mail. It runs from receipt of the notice. So there you would not need the additional 5 days for mailing because your time period doesn't start running until you actually receive it.
Yes, correct. And I believe like an adverse action, the time starts to run from when the adverse action takes effect. I can read to you the language of Article 34.
So in the actual agreement, is the sentence in the first paragraph or the second paragraph?
It's in the first paragraph. If service and the union fail to settle any grievance processed under the negotiated grievance procedure, such grievance upon written request by the union may be submitted to arbitration within 15 calendar days from the date the services final decision is personally delivered or mailed. And then the second sentence, if services by mail, 5 additional calendar days shall be allowed. So the second paragraph then goes on to, in cases of involving suspensions of less than 15 days or adverse actions, request for arbitration must be filed after receipt of the notice of decision, but not later than 30 calendar days after the effective date of action. One of the things I wanted to point out about the aspect of filing, though, is that it is kind of a matter beyond the union's control. They can put it in the mailbox, but as to when the agency is actually going to receive it, you saw from the appendix that those things are being mailed here to D.C. This case was out of Rio Grande Valley in South Texas. So as to when the agency actually gets it, it's beyond their control. And this comes back to my original argument that you're creating a more rigid standard by saying now that the union it is the union's right to invoke arbitration, now has to downward depart on their 30-day deadline, whereas they wouldn't if it was MSPB. And there's other things they have to take into consideration, which I'll concede I didn't get into my brief, but duty of fair representation. You're spending money for arbitration that is collective money. And so there's analysis in this, and this is a case that is worthy of spending the members' money on. And that's not something that can be done quickly. You have to take a look at the case, but now your time is shortened. All the more reason why you need the less rigid standard here for arbitration.
Can I ask you a textual argument about these two paragraphs?
Sure.
Because they seem to be, just be parallel procedures, just depending on what's happening here. You know, you have grievances, but for more serious actions, you can go straight to arbitration. In the first paragraph, it says may be submitted. So that sounds like the time is you have to submit within 15 days, which very comfortably, I think, would read as mailing within 15 days. Does the fact that they use the word filed here have any real significance, or is it just a different word? It seems to me that we should be reading these provisions consistently, because they're really talking about here are less serious things, here's the procedures for those, here are more serious things, here's the procedures for those. I have a hard time reading the words, the fact that they chose to use the word submitted in one place and filing in another place as imposing different rules for receipt.
Yeah, and I would completely agree with you, Your Honor. To me, it doesn't stand any logic for the union to give themselves different standards for invoking to arbitration. I think they just chose two different words with the intended same meaning, and I think the record supports that with the 15 or 13 cases, if you're going to believe the arbitrator, that were invoked in the exact same way. So I think the union here did regard this filing system for grievances or for discipline or adverse actions as being the same method. I believe I'm a little over time. Unless you have further questions, I'll defer to reply.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hurst.
May it please the Court. This Court should affirm the arbitrator's decision, the plain and ordinary meaning of the contract language in the CBA.
Do you agree that we have to know the review of the CBA?
I do agree, Your Honor. That we would confirm that that is the standard. However, if you do get into past practices...
Do you think filed has a plain and ordinary meaning in all contexts?
I think it does, unless... I think the default rule is in Black's dictionary, law dictionary, as was cited by the arbitrator, cited by the
Why
Supreme Court.
Why do you go to Black's law dictionary necessarily to interpret a CBA?
Because you're looking at the plain and ordinary terms of it is like contract
Black's
interpretation.
Black's law might be more relevant if we were looking at the word filed in the context of court procedures. But in the terms of more informal collective bargaining, I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case. Why didn't you go to a regular dictionary definition of filing?
Well, I mean, obviously you're talking about a legal document. So I think that's why Black's Law Dictionary would be completely appropriate. I think also, Your Honor, when it comes to interpreting a contract is a legal document.
Let me ask you this. If we find that filing is not plain, why wouldn't we, in looking at, I think, the Gunn case and just other cases, read it more generously in terms of implying a mailbox rule instead of more strictly? Wouldn't that be consistent with labor policies?
I think it would not be, Your Honor. First of all, it's important to remember the grievant here, Mr. Garcia, had the opportunity either to go to the arbitrator or he could have gone to the MSPB. He had that choice. So,
but of course, if he'd gone to the MSPB, he would have gotten the mailbox rule.
Well, that's true, and that's one benefit of going to the MSPB.
Can you address the textual argument I was suggesting about the difference between submitted and filed? Because whatever you say about the plain meaning of filed, I don't see how you could ever say that submitted means it has to be received by the agency.
I agree, and I think while we may have a little difference of opinion on how submitted versus filed would be read, obviously petitioner says that there shouldn't be any change, but words have meaning.
Well,
and submitted is different, and I think I would...
So do you agree that if we were talking about the first part, submitted, that the mailbox rule would probably apply?
I think it probably would.
So is there any rational reason for why for less serious issues the mailbox rule applies, but for more serious adverse action, a stricter rule should apply?
Well, as a policy ground, I don't know. All I can speak to is the agreement that the union negotiated with the agency.
That seems to be going back to kind of a plain language reading.
Sure, but that's also what Congress instructs. You're not supposed to be going out and looking at potentially more favorable rules. And the statute states...
When we're looking at a plain language reading of a particular word, I think we're also entitled to look at how the entire relevant provision is structured. And your reading of it seems, unless it was very explicit, that filing meant receipt, a little bit strained.
Obviously there may be a difference of opinion of whether or not the plain and ordinary meaning of filed means...
Well, there are plenty of provisions out there where filing actually does have a mailbox rule.
Well, yes, but they always define it as such, right? I mean, that's the difference. I mean,
what do you mean by define it as such?
Your Honor.
That's fine. The MSPB provision, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, doesn't say filed by X, but there's a mailbox rule. Instead, I thought it actually reads to as something that purports, in fact, to define the filing as the receipt at a certain point when something is mailed.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I mean, for example, the text of the MSPB, and it's at 5 CFR section 1201.4 subsection L. If you look at that section, throughout it says, for the purpose of filing, you can file in several different ways. And then it goes forward and each subsection actually tells you how you can file it, and in fact states the date of filing by mail is determined by the postmark date. It is explicit.
Right, so that suggests that there's a lot of different meanings to filing.
At the MSPB.
But your view is the default rule is filing means receipt.
I think it's delivered and received. I mean, it's not my default rule. That's the Supreme Court's default rule. I mean, that is how they've defined it. When they say, look upon it. Well, for courts, and I think also when looking at statutes.
This isn't a statute.
Well, it's a contract. It's a contract.
This isn't filing in a court. It's a submission to an agency office.
Well, Your Honor, one concern, what I think I'm hearing from the court is we're dealing with a question of fairness here, and the idea that the statute says it has to be fair and simple procedure when it comes to arbitration. But I think the problem you run into is that you have one, on the one hand, you can say, well, this is unfair in this one instance. But what it does do is it creates if you go with a broader rule that says, we're going to look at the terms, the ordinary and plain meaning of the contract or the collective bargaining agreement, unless there's more favorable rules somewhere else.
Well, again, that's only, I would agree with you if there was one singular ordinary meaning of the term filed. But if we disagree with you on that, I don't see why there's any reason to read it in a stricter way.
Well, I mean, I guess obviously that... You have de novo review, and that is within the court's the determination. We, obviously strongly believe that the ordinary and plain meaning obviously is filed means, and that's what the Supreme Court says it does, and that's not only in the context of court filings, but that's what I think everyday bargainers do use when they use when you sign an agreement, like the collective bargaining agreement, that's what you do, and that's what the statute says to do. It says, any collective bargaining agreement shall provide the procedures for the settlement of grievances, including questions of arbitrability. The procedures shall be the exclusive administrative procedures for resolving grievances. So the arbitration agreement itself should stand on its own. We shouldn't be looking outside of that to potentially more favorable. And I don't think Gunn stands for that. I think Gunn recognized that you are supposed to have a fair and simple process. But it's also important to remember in Gunn, the facts of that case are certainly distinct from this one, whereas in Gunn, the agency failed to timely raise any objection to the particular issue there, whereas here it was immediately raised. So we hope that the court will take that into account as one distinction between Gunn and this circumstance. Also, when it comes to past practice, that presumably would be where the court would go with this. I don't think there is an established past practice here. I think if you look in the appendix, for example, you will see, first of all, the agency objected at some level. And second, the last invocation of arbitration that was using this mailbox rule was back in 2010. We're talking about 3 years before this particular one. So the idea that there's a past practice isn't there. And in fact, I would point, just for the court's background, there is a case out there that we failed to cite in our brief called Cruz Martinez v. Department of Homeland Security, 410 F3rd 1366, which in fact deals with past practices and essentially says you only go to past practices if in fact the collective bargaining agreement is silent. And here it's not silent. We would, of course, again submit that filed is in there, and that's the term that should be used, and the clear and plain meaning should be used. As to other arguments, Your Honor, I mean, I think one thing that's also important to remember is that when it comes to filing, it's a question of mutuality here and whether or not there's a past practice, and we would submit that there was no mutuality here. But to the extent that at some time it wasn't raised, the collective bargaining agreement, again, the terms of the contract itself, permit the parties to waive this on a particular basis, on a particular case-by-case basis. And, of course, this time we didn't. We raised the issue, and we don't believe that we had waived it by not raising it in some circumstances and raising it in others. And, in fact, we did in that March 2009 letter, which is in the joint appendix, pages 162 and 163. And, in fact, the arbitrator so found and at least quoted that language and took note of that. And, again, that would be subject, we think, to arbitrary capricious review, and you would only be able to overturn that particular ruling based on arbitrary capricious review as opposed to de novo, which would be you have to obviously find the ambiguity, which we don't believe it is, but assuming you did, I think you only get there, you have to find his ruling otherwise arbitrary and capricious on that issue. Finally, given that the court doesn't seem to have any other questions, does the court want a copy of the collective bargaining agreement? Do you want a copy of excerpts?
I think your friend confirmed this, but the correct version is in the appendix, not in your red brief.
I think that's right. I mean, in fact, I can give you the exact places in the appendix.
Why don't you just send us a joint letter with a copy of the actual agreement that you both agree on?
Is counsel of no objection from the counsel? Okay, so we'll work on that, Your Honor, and we'll get you a copy. Do you want an excerpted copy, or would you like the whole collective bargaining agreement is 102 pages?
I think an excerpt.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir.
We would just state that we would respectfully request the arbitrator's decision be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Horowitz?
Thank you. I just wanted to follow up on the CFR as compared to the contract language. As you're aware, the contract language is silent as to defining the term filed, whereas I believe it's accurately quoted in the corrected joint appendix at page 66, 5 CFR 1201.4, it's explicit that the date of filing by mail is determined by the postmark date, whereas the contract here is silent. And I believe, if Your Honors have recognized, is that looking to Black's Law Dictionary and court case decisions to determine what should be a common and plain meaning of the word filed just doesn't make sense. I think what makes far more sense in logic is to look at the labor forums that this exclusive representative operates in, such as MSPB and FLRA. I think that's where you would look at a postmark or mailbox rule here is what makes far more sense to apply to the definition of the term filed. Unless you have any questions, I think I will conclude my reply.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Aldridge. Thank you, both counsel. The case is submitted, and that concludes our session for this morning.
Thank you very much.
All rise.